Welcome to the Specify Growth Podcast. I'm your host, Tats Nakagawa of Castagra Products. Each week, I talk to leaders and experts about how to overcome adversity, grow massive organizations, and how to create meaningful change in the building materials and construction industry. Today's guest is Russell Hickson. He's the editor at Site News. So, Russell, thank you for coming on the show.
Yeah, no worries. Thank you for having me so much.
Great. Your background, journalism. Was that always the case?
Yes. Even right out of high school, I wasn't particularly good at math. I wasn't particularly good at science. I was kind of small and skinny and frail. So, I mean, I couldn't do something that physical. And I'm like, man, I got to work with what I got. And so I thought, you know what? Let's go into journalism. Like, I love writing. I love talking to people. I love learning new things. And so I set out to become a journalist, and I have dual citizenship. I'm an American and a Canadian, even though I grew up in BC. And so I thought, you know what? Let's go on an adventure. And my brother lives in Oklahoma. He lives in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And so I thought, you know what? I've watched all the movies. I want to be a crime reporter. I want to be the guy investigating, uncovering corruption, doing all that stuff. So I went to school, and for years in the US, I was an investigative crime reporter writing about murder and mayhem and car accidents and going to court and going through public documents. And it was a blast. It was really, really fun.
You talked about the, you know, going to, you know, court, going through files, but What's the other part? What's the field stuff? I'm just trying to imagine.
So like, I have a police scanner on my desk, right? And so you memorize all the police codes. And so when you hear a big event, a significant thing that happens on the scanner, you would get in your car and you'd go to the scene. You'd shoot photos. You'd have all your sources. You'd contact them, and you'd write about what's happening. There was a huge mudslide because I worked in Oklahoma. I worked in Arkansas, and I worked in Washington State. And so in every one of those states, I mean, they all had different problems and different major issues that I covered. So I would do like kind of breaking news stuff. And then I would do more of what we call like enterprise reporting. So like in Skagit County, I wrote about heroin trafficking, which was a huge problem. And I interviewed a bunch of different sources all the way from like recovery groups and, you know, for people who had lost loved ones and people who were getting sober, and also with law enforcement and, you know, the gang unit tracking, you know, how these things move through the county. So definitely very different than what I write about now.
Yeah, well, because what comes to mind is, I mean, obviously you're talking to some people that may not want to talk or you don't want to talk to you, and maybe physical danger comes to mind. Like, what are the tips and things you learn? Because I'm curious, but maybe in those situations, maybe not that curious.
I mean, people have tried to hit me. People have taken swings at me. People have been extremely unhappy that I've been writing about them. One of my bigger stories I did was about a gun store in Washington State that had violated federal law for a decade. They've been embezzling money. Their guns had been stolen and used in crimes. They hadn't reported it. Just a ton of horrible activity. And they had no idea that I knew about this. I'd uncovered a bunch of court documents. And so one of the things that I had to do before I published the article is call the owners and explain that you're going to be on the front page and it's going to be very nasty stuff. And they were not very happy about it. So I guess my one tip would be do it over the phone, especially with people who have a lot of guns. That's probably a good idea. And also, like, I don't know, just follow the ethics of what you're supposed to do. You know, when I would visit accident scenes and all sorts of stuff, I would never take photos of people who were grieving. I would never take photos of dead bodies. I just don't see the news value in exploiting that. And so I think respecting people as human beings is a big part of it. Those are some things that I think I learned.
Yeah. So from that side of the business to construction.
Yeah.
How'd it happen?
So I think I went through an experience that a lot of people kind of my age, I mean, I'm getting into my mid-30s. Your parents start to get older and you start to realize, you know what? They're not going to be around forever. You know, family time is really valuable. And I was running around the US having some adventures. I got to a point in my life where I'm like, you know, I want to be closer to my family and spend time with them. So I came back to Canada and I had no contacts in the Canadian journalism industry. And I just applied for jobs. And the only people who would hire me, the Journal of Commerce, which writes about construction in Western Canada. I knew nothing about construction. I just went, you know what? I'll figure it out. And I've never looked back. I've loved it. I've met so many interesting people. I've made so many great friends, and I don't really want to write about anything else now.
Very cool. And what were your early learnings? Like, you know, crashing into it and trying to learn.
I think that I had a lot of stereotypes about construction that had to be shattered. I thought it was a very dirty, rough, unsophisticated industry with unsophisticated people. I don't know. Maybe that's too mean. I don't think I had that bad of a view of it, but it was close to that. I just thought it was something people did if they couldn't make it into university. I think that's what I was taught in school. That was kind of like, you know, you had the carrot and the stick. The carrot was, you know, go to university, get like a great white collar job. And the stick was, if you don't do it, man, you're going to have to end up in some horrible construction site, you know, in the cold, in the rain, all dirty and muddy. And then what I found was construction was an extremely sophisticated industry with lots of very high tech, intelligent people. And the role, I think I also didn't realize the massive role that construction plays in our everyday life and making the country work, just like the roads that we drive on, you know, the water that we drink, the buildings that we walk around in, and just the massive amount of brain power and effort that goes into the built environment. So yeah, I think my early impressions were just, I really didn't understand kind of the secret world that was creating, you know, the city that I lived in.
Yeah, you've done a lot of interviews, hosted podcasts. What's your most memorable article or episode?
I think it's actually a recent one that I did. This is something that I've continued to think about. And I interviewed someone named Marsha Brondi. She's a carpenter. She was one of the first, if not the first, Red Seal carpenter in British Columbia. And I spent several hours chatting with her just about her experiences, just going through the process and just the horrific abuse that was shown towards her and how she had to overcome so much, not subtle, just straight up sexism and harassment, and how she had to overcome that. And she's still alive. That wasn't that long ago. You know, that was in like the 80s. And so I don't know. I think it was really eye opening, and it was fascinating too, because you hear all these statistics about women in construction and you hear that it's like kind of a male dominated environment sometimes. And it was great to chat with someone who's gone through that. But also, it was also encouraging how much our industry has changed. I think those stories are becoming a lot less common. So that's also encouraging. But I don't know. It's a story that's really stuck out to me, just hearing about this person's experiences and all the things that they had to overcome. And she went on to advise the federal government and has advocated for women and just been a really incredible person. And she could have given up immediately and lost her hope and given in. And she's just such an incredibly strong person. I really admire her. And it was really inspiring to chat with her.
Wonderful. That's a great trend. What other trends are you tracking or are you excited about?
Yeah, I thought this might come up. So I made a list, believe it or not.
Wonderful.
So one is, I think construction in the past has been a lot of one-offs. You'll come together as a team, a temporary team. You'll build a building that's kind of bespoke, that everything has to be figured out and coordinated. And I think we're moving towards more what a lot of people are calling industrialized construction, where instead of doing kind of one-offs, you productize, you know, what you're building. And we're seeing this with some, especially in like plumbing and mechanical trades, where they're starting to do a lot of prefabrication and stuff. And I think that's going to lead to kind of digitizing some of these products. So even before you start building, you can have a lot more certainty about kind of what products you're going to be getting, what their performance is going to be, how they might fit together. So I think the industry is going to become a lot more kind of industrialized, which I think is a big deal with our labor shortages, with high construction costs and material costs. I mean, I believe you guys work in building materials. So this is probably something you're a lot more familiar with than I am.
Yeah, for sure. I love that trend, for sure.
And then another one is, I think everyone knows this one, digitization, where we're moving from paper and conversations to, you know, much more digitization and all this data. I think that digitization is going to do a lot of things. I mean, obviously, you have the obvious ones where people aren't keeping paper books anymore. They're moving on to more sophisticated financial management systems. That's kind of old news. I think we're moving to companies are amassing massive amounts of data that they're being organized in such a way that AI and machine learning is gonna be able to do some pretty interesting things. I think we're seeing this with a lot of the large contractors. I've interviewed Graham and PCL and some of these different companies, and a lot of them right now, they're taking all their data and they're organizing it in structured ways so that future technologies and future applications of AI is going to be able to, you know, potentially make predictions about if a project is going to be successful and different things like that, which I think is really kind of the next step for digitization. Once you've digitized a lot of your processes and you have all this data, what do you do with it? Well, you have to sort it in such a way that AI and some of these cool, buzzy new tools can actually read it and make sense of it and give meaning to it. So that's another one that I'm seeing, which I think is interesting. And then I got two more, if you'll indulge.
Yeah, well, that's what I was waiting.
Yeah. So the third one, I think, is I've been covering construction in Canada for nearly a decade. And I think something that I keep seeing at conferences and interviews and just chatting with everybody is there seems to be this movement towards more collaboration. I think when I first started, there was a bit more, people were in their corners and their silos. And I think more and more, everyone is starting to realize we can't keep fighting each other. We have to work together more. And I think you see this with the rise of some of these, you know, project delivery models like IPD and Alliance. More and more people are using them and having positive experiences. And I think people start to realize, like, we can't go into a project as adversaries. We have to go into a project as a team. And the goal is to be successful as a project, not just successful individually. And I'm definitely seeing that sentiment increase. And I guess the final one is construction doesn't want to be evil. I think you're seeing a rise of ESG, not just because of, you know, companies wanting good press or wanting to get those headlines or whatever. I think a lot of companies genuinely want to be good. They don't want to be a force for bad in the world. They don't want to hurt the environment. They want to treat their employees well. They want to leave communities better than they found them when they go in and do a project. And I'm seeing this with a lot of companies of all different sizes. And I think that's going to have a lot of impacts. Mainly, I think, you know, with young people who are looking for a job, they don't want to work for a company that's doing bad things, that's not good for the environment. And I think it's going to become necessary if you want to recruit, you know, young, intelligent, up and coming people. Money is one part of it, but, you know, they can go somewhere else and make good money. They want to work for a company that they can be proud of. And I think that's important to a lot of people who are entering the industry. And those are kind of some of the big trends that I'm seeing.
Awesome. And, you know, with the advancement of technology, you know, from the side I'm aware, the material side, it certainly helps us. Some of the options that are available are high performance, right? They're not inferior, and it makes it, you know, easier. So I think everyone can pitch in to make it easier for doing the right thing.
Yeah, and I think it's really discouraging in some industries. You see the effort into making products more profitable than higher performing. Like, I don't know what the term is, it like engineered obsolescence, or I'm really discouraged when I see all this brain power being put into making a product not work better, but making it work worse, because that's more profitable, right? Making things break, making things not perform well, so people have to keep buying. And so it's encouraging in construction to see products perform better, right? Better thermal performance, you know, better tolerances. You know, for like a passive house project or something like that, you need really good materials to hit some of those things. And it's encouraging to see. I don't know if you know this, we had our 25 innovators competition, and you know, some of the winners were product manufacturers who are doing really cool things with recyclable materials or really, really high performance materials that just allow less waste in the built environment, which I think is really cool. I don't know. I'm curious what you guys are doing on this side, because you're much more knowledgeable about this than I am.
Well, I mean, I think just the triple bottom line, right? I think if you take an R&D approach and say it is possible to make good products that are economically competitive, that, you know, meet environmental, and that is the goal. And then, of course, you know, you want, you know, with the price competitive, the economics to make that change occur, I think it's possible. And I think more and more people are realizing that you don't have to trade off, or the trade-offs are minimal. And I think it's just a mindset shift, right? Instead of saying, oh, you know, putting certain things first, like, well, why don't we shoot for all of those and see how close we can get?
Yeah, and I think that's a good point to make, because, I mean, at the end of the day, you want to, I mean, obviously you want to help the environment, you want to do good things, but you have workers that you have to pay and you have mouths that you have to feed. It has to be, the business model does have to be profitable. But I think a lot of companies are proving that you can do all of those things. I was just writing the other day about the fastest growing companies in Canada. And one of them was a housing developer. And from the very beginning, it's a female-led CEO. I think they're called Vanta. I can't quite remember. But from the very start, they were explicit with their goal is to build housing for women and children who are fleeing violence and make it affordable. And they're one of the fastest growing companies in Canada, extremely profitable, doing extremely well, and helping people. And I think you don't have to do one or the other necessarily.
Absolutely, 100%. Now, one of the things, your background is in journalism. And I know for the last bunch of years, not as much, more recently in construction, I'd find that every, you know, the whole slogan of everyone is a media company, but marketers like to kind of, you know, talk about that, but you are actually in media. And I'm curious, you know, because marketers always think they know everything, and I'm a marketer, so I understand. But, you know, coming from that side, what are companies doing right on this quote unquote, everyone's a media company, and what are they doing wrong? Because I think there's a gap there, right? Being a media company is a very specific skill set.
Yeah. I mean, I can't speak for marketing. That's not my expertise, but I think a lot of companies are scared to kind of open their doors up, and you have to go through so many. I think people can tell when something is super manicured and marketed, and they can tell when reading an interview or watching a video when something is extremely scripted. And I think authenticity is something that is really, really captivating. And that's why often I try to never do email interviews. I try to get someone on the phone or get someone in person and really have a genuine conversation. I mean, talking points are good. I know a lot of people undergo media training. That's fine. A lot of people are nervous to talk to media, but I think the best, most captivating stories are authentic. I think sitting down and having authentic, real conversation, and even in your marketing materials with your company, being very honest and open, I think is really interesting. And I think there's a lot of companies that do this great, but I think some companies get so nervous and they overthink so many things that they don't make themselves very available for that.
Yeah. So how do you set the right environment for that openness to occur? Because you're doing this all the time, right?
Yeah.
With people you don't know, and you got to build rapport quickly. Like, any tips for that?
I think it all starts with a strong story and a strong idea, and then it'll just kind of fall into place. I mean, just do interesting, good things. And I think when I'm writing a story, writing is easy, right? I can fix bad writing. I can go back and edit. But if you start with a bad story or a boring story or just not a very captivating story idea, there's no amount of massaging and editing that can make that interesting. I think it's knowing when you have a good story, when you're, or just do something really, really cool. I mean, there's companies that do really, really, really cool things. And even there's no way you can make it uninteresting. I'm trying to think of an example, like let's say you have an employee that climbs Mount Everest. Like it's hard to make that boring, right? Highlight it, let people know, you know, or if you're doing something really, really cool, I'll do an example. Like lots of companies do Movember. We're in the middle of November. So Movember, M as in Mo, for men's health issues, right? So a lot of companies are doing fundraising, and I've been trying to find out what sort of efforts are happening. And, you know, there's a company called Fort Modular. Rather than just doing the normal, you know, here's our fundraising page, they have these giant portable units that they lease and sell, and they put giant mustaches on them. And they're using that as a vehicle to generate revenue. So I think, you know, being more creative and more captivating with what you do, make the story so interesting that I can't help but cover it. Like, what am I going to do? I have to cover it.
Dare to be different?
Yeah, dare to be different. Do something interesting. Or like another good example is there's a charity in Victoria called Hero Work. And rather than just ask for donations, because they would do what they call radical renovations. Unfortunately, I believe that they shut down that chapter. But rather than just do like, you know, here's our donation page, please donate. Trevor Botkin, who is a tradesperson and he was running the charity, he would lock himself in a jail cell and he would lift himself up in a crane. Like he would do these outrageous things that the media they had to cover it. There's no, like, even non-construction media would just throw up their hands and it'd be like, this is so wild and interesting. I have to go cover it. You know, what am I going to do?
Perfect.
Yeah. Or even I think they're called WZMH architecture firm. Rather than just do like beautiful, I mean, lots of architecture firms do beautiful projects, but they developed like a modular building system. And then they went and started rebuilding houses in Ukraine in the war. Like, that's such a fascinating, and they created all these, rather than just do something that's innovative, they took something that's innovative and applied it to a real world, you know, crisis situation. Not that they did it in a self-serving way necessarily to get coverage, but that's so interesting and such a captivating story. How could I not cover that?
Wonderful. I love it. Is there anything that I didn't cover or ask you that you wanted to share?
I mean, I want to say, like, I write for Site News, and I loved working at the Journal of Commerce. It's a great publication. I worked there for 8 years, and then I got the opportunity to write for this brand new digital publication and kind of be more in charge of the content. I thought that'd be super fun. And it's been really fascinating to kind of, I've never written newsletters before. And we've been developing this newsletter that's getting thousands and thousands of subscribers. We've been doing kind of new digital content that I never did before. And it's just been really fun to try out different kinds of content. And so I encourage everybody, check out sitenews.com, read sitenews.com, subscribe to our newsletter. If you have a story or if you have something that you want to cover, Russell@readsitenews.com. My email's open. You know, I can't cover stuff that I don't know about. Sometimes that happens a lot too. That's another tip I'll give is I'm not a mind reader. You know, journalists aren't mind readers. Don't hesitate to just shoot an email, make a phone call. Because oftentimes if there's a great story that's not getting covered, we might not even know about it. So yeah, feel free to reach out to me.
Perfect. Thank you for listening to the Specify Growth podcast today. Make sure you check out youtube.com/TatsTalks for video of today's podcast. Hit the subscribe button for upcoming episodes.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.